Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 18th, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners. This meeting is being made available telephonically for access by the public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff participating in the meeting, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any background noise or feedback, we ask you to please mute your telephones if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Corey Myers, General Counsel of RI Housing. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information and documents for each of the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Chair of the Board, Stephen Pryor, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Pryor to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Stephen Pryor, and I will call the meeting to order. The time is 9:36 a.m., and I'm going to go ahead and ask Carol to conduct the roll.
Certainly. Commissioner McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Barry.
Here.
Commissioner Pryor.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Dignico.
Here.
Chairman.
I'll introduce Board Action 1, which is, as always, the approval of the minutes. This is for the meeting held on March 28th. Would you take a quick look, refresh your recollection, and when you're ready, I will entertain a motion on the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion made. Is there a second?
Second. Sarah.
Any edits, questions, discussion?
I'm going to recuse myself for the minutes.
Anyone else? Hearing none. Corey, would you conduct the voice vote, please?
Certainly. All those in favor of approving the minutes of the board meeting held on March 28, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have one recusal and 4 affirmative votes. The motion, thanks.
Very good. For today's meeting, I'm going to transition straight into the business agenda and start with agenda item 3 and ask Carol for your review of recent activities and trends, if you would.
Thank you, Chairman. Starting with our single-family production, first mortgages are closing for down, not surprising given inventory levels and interest rates. We are working through the last of the state down payment assistance, and we're also starting to deploy our new 15K products. So hopefully this picks up as we go into the spring. It's going to be a great purchasing season for us. So we provided a chart on page 2 of this report, which provides information on the status of the fiscal recovery funding that we're in on behalf of the state. This includes funding program by program. I had the opportunity to have my Commissioner Womer on Friday, and he asked whether or not we could have a one-pager that we can provide monthly, and staff worked on putting together what you have in front of you, which outlines the programs we're administering by development programs, pre-development activities, and down payment assistance with some graphs on the back. James, did you want to say a few things about where we stand as of 3/31?
Sure. So of the total funds that we've been asked to administer on the just the straight development programs and direct subsidy, a little over 138 million. We've already committed 103, almost 104 million. There's 36 million pending award, and we've spent $16 million to date. That number will grow every month now that some deals have closed and more are expected to close this spring. You know, there's when you see this next month, we will have Crossroads Summer Street closed, which is a big expenditure. That's a great project that'll move a lot of money. And the remainder of the funds you will all see next month, as all these programs we expect to fully award at the May 16th board meeting. So that's moving along quite well. As I said, more deals are closing in the spring, and we'll be moving expenditures quickly there. On the pre-development side, very happy to report that most of the almost $37 million has been committed, and almost $28.5 million have been expended for site acquisition pre-development and the PHA program. Again, very successful programs. A couple more pre-development loans will be closed very shortly, and moving forward with that, and we will have closed on the remainder of the SAP dollars very shortly as well, and that project will be wound down. We also have another great successful program, the down payment assistance. We've been able to help about almost 1,600 folks get into first homes for $30 million. We've committed almost all of the dollars and expended almost $28 million. So there's some visual representations of where things are in various stages in these charts. But overall, we're on a great path to not only getting these dollars expended before the deadlines, but also creating thousands of new units and putting people into their first homes. It's more work than we've ever done, but it's very gratifying, and you know, we've got some great partners out there that are helping us get it done.
Yeah, definitely. We do have a dashboard on the website, so we go to a map that's on the website that talks a bit about the project and where they're located as well. So I'd like you to absorb this. I do have it in with Commissioner Warmer as well to look at and give us feedback, things that are missing, if you'd like to see the data presented differently, move forward with this one page.
I was going to say, I just wanted to share on the Sentinel Assistance Program. I got some very unsolicited feedback on this. I was at a meeting, actually at church, and somebody was telling a story, like this great success story of a realtor, and she was working with someone who was trying to get a mortgage, single mom, and she said, you know, it took a while to just go through the process, and the woman was getting really impatient, and she was like, I need to close, and she said, don't worry, you will close, it's going to work out, it just takes time, and while they were waiting, one of these grants freed up. I don't know what happened, but somehow something must have freed up, and so she was able to get a grant, which also, you know, helped her close, and now she's got some money to put some money back into the house. And I was making all the connections here as I heard the story. This woman was just like, she's a realtor, and she just wanted to share like the highlight of her week. So
that's great.
Just wanted to say that it's definitely making a difference.
This was a successful program. The dollars flew out the door, and that's when we made the decision to move admin resources into the program so that we could do more. Yeah.
Great.
Next month is going to be a very busy month, so you should plan for a long board meeting. We plan to cover credits, and with the balance of funding that's available, potentially more than 15 board actions come next month. So we'll buy extra vehicles. We had some events. We had the opportunity to join the League of March to share information on our programs and services. Amy Raynone represented us on a panel discussing the MTAP. We were happy to host lunch with Kim McLean, HUD Assistant Secretary for Congressional and Intergovernmental Relations, along with Juana Mateus, our HUD Regional Administrator. They were in town. They toured Compley Chambers 2 and 3 in Joseph Catry Apartments. They were also joined by the governor and the secretary down in Newport to view all of the good work that Rhonda is doing down in Newport. And lastly, I joined the mayor in Central Falls as the city celebrated the opening of Jenks Park Residence. This is a great example of combining housing, services, and healthcare for women in the city. We have a few upcoming events. You have a one-pager here. We're continuing our municipal events. Thank you to the Secretary and to Commissioner Orth for joining us in Providence. We have one event in Newport on April 26th and another in East Providence on May 3rd. Fingers crossed about East Providence in traffic, but we look forward to being with the mayor there. The mayor is doing terrific work in the city. Amy, any others to follow after this, or will this wrap up?
That's it for the meet and greet. Yep, I know that there's a number of ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings that are going to be getting lined up as we go into the building season.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, the finance group executed a $160 million bond issuance for the HOB program, a component of which is hedged variable rate. The entire issuance will be used for our single family mortgage program. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any more questions for Carol? So I'm going to move on to board action number four, firm approval of financing for Lockwood Plaza Phase 1 in Providence. And Ann Berman, of course, as always, we welcome the presentation.
Thank you, Chairman. This is Ann Berman. So this request for action is for firm approval of a tax-exempt construction loan of up to $12.3 million, of which $3 million will remain as permanent first debt, as well as firm approval of a DAH-2 loan, a capital magnet fund loan, and a CRP grant. And all of this is for Lockwood Plaza Phase 1, which is located in Providence. The developer is the Wind Companies. Lockwood is currently a 209-unit development. Phase 1, which is the subject of this action, is the rehabilitation of 108 townhouses at the site, primarily family units. The existing units, which are part of a senior high-rise, will be part of a future redevelopment. So the townhouse unit mix includes 1 to 4 bedroom units. They're all limited to 60% of area median income. Many units benefit from Section 8 housing choice vouchers, but they're not project-based. And so they are, the developer's able to offer affordable housing for residents. 30%. So it's a really important asset. Scope of work includes interior and exterior upgrades, all kitchens and baths, full window replacement, some other envelope upgrades, as well as ADA improvements. The investor is Boston Financial, who's paying a little over 98 cents per credit. I do note that there was a question regarding the approval and loan to value determination during the credit committee. So after reviewing, we shared with the credit committee chairman that the write-up submitted contained an erroneous calculation of the as-improved valuation. The request you have today accurately reflects the information, and we apologize for the confusion. In summary, seeking approval of a tax bond of $12.3 million, a two loan of $1,010,000, capital magnet fund loan of $990,000, and a CRP grant of $680,000. So happy to answer any questions.
Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Another shot at questions or comments.
Just a comment.
Please.
I think this is important that because we're, you know, all the news is talking about, you know, new development, new units, stuff like this, but I think this is an important part that should be highlighted, that, you know, these apartments were built in 1979 and people are living there, and this is to be a game changer to be able to invest and update that too. And I think that's a very important part of the housing mission and Brown housing mission. So I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. Anything else for now? All right. Seconded, Corey, would you do the honors?
Of course. All those in favor of firm approval of financing for Lockwood Plaza Phase 1 located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 5 affirmative votes, and the motion is approved.
On to board action 5, firm approval of first mortgage financing for Cathedral Square Apartments in Providence. And back to you, Ann.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Ann Berman. So this RFA is for firm approval of a taxable loan for Cathedral Square 2 apartments in Providence. The developer is the Cathedral Development Group. CSA 2, 93 units. They're all supported with a HAP contract that was recently renewed for 20 years. This development is not currently in our portfolio. The developer refinanced the development in 2013 with a HUD MAP loan, and undertook a moderate rehabilitation at the time. So they are not planning to undertake any rehab as part of this transaction. We did commission a CNA, or capital needs assessment, that confirmed that the property is in good shape. The developer will capitalize a replacement reserve of almost 7,600 a unit, as well as make their annual deposits, and this maintains a positive replacement reserve for nearly 20 years. As is standard in these transactions, we will require a new capital needs assessment at year 10, and if necessary, we will, you know, modify the deposits that they make to ensure that it is good for another 15 years. So Cathedral is facilitating this refinance to withdraw equity. The loan requested today is the maximum amount based on an interest rate. We note that interest rates have increased since we sized this, so I fully expect that the final loan amount will be lower, and then, you know, requisite the proceeds lower as well. So this transaction will bring the development into our portfolio. It'll put a strong loan on our balance sheet, and it will extend the affordability for another 40 years. So we're recommending approval of this loan. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I know that it will be funded through the Federal Financing Bank Reshare Initiative.
Questions? And we talked about the large equity takeout in committee, and you gave good answers. Could we just revisit it just for the full board?
Sure. So as I noted, this project is not in our portfolio right now. This developer has a strong balance sheet. This is a strong project. They could go to many other lenders, probably get a lower interest rate than what we're going to give them so that their equity takeout would be higher. But they want to work with us. We have many other projects with them that are in our portfolio. We have a, you know, kind of a long-standing relationship. So that is why we are making the loan. And we're thrilled that it's going to be on our balance sheet.
Any other questions or comments? I'll entertain a motion. Second.
Second.
Another shot at questions or comments. Done. Corey, would you conduct the voice vote, please?
Happy to. All those in favor of firm approval of first mortgage financing for Cathedral Square Apartments 2, located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Action 6, approval of transfer of physical assets for Smith Hill Visions Limited Partnership in Providence. And one more time to Ann.
Thank you, Chairman. So as we've noted every time when we have one of these, it's an administrative action required under our general rules. So this request for action is for two items. The first is approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest, and then second, the approval of the subsequent sale of the development, development interest in Smith Hill Visions. Smith Hill Visions is a 26-unit scattered site family development. It's in the Smith Hill neighborhood in Providence. The initial 15-year compliance period ended in 2019. The general partner is the Smith Hill CDC, and there are two current investors, and they are partners, or they're affiliates of Apollo Housing Capital. So these Apollo entities intend to withdraw. They're going to transfer their limited partnership interest to Smith Hill CDC, who will assume all of the existing obligations, of course. Current property manager is Dimio, so there's no change in the management agent. Subsequent to the transfer of the limited partnership interest, Smith Hill has notified us and their other community partners that once the transfer is completed, they intend to dissolve and sell all of its assets, including Visions development. So they have entered into an agreement with Dimio or a related party. Dimio is a seasoned developer, property management firm. They've been in Rhode Island for years. They own both affordable and market rate portfolio. And as we mentioned at Credit Committee, they previously purchased two other developments from Smith Hill CDC over the last couple of years in the same neighborhood. The sale of the development to Dimio Properties was reviewed by both our leased housing department as well as our development division, and determined that the transfer is both beneficial to the residents of the development as well as the long-term prospects of the development itself. So we're seeking approval of the transfer of the LP interest as well as the sale of the development from Smith Hill CDC to Dimio Properties. So happy to answer any questions.
Questions? None. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve this.
And a second.
I'll second. Kevin Orr.
Any comments or questions?
Chairman, if I may, there are a few other scattered site properties that this nonprofit owns and operates. We don't want to lose affordable housing areas. May be in a position to take these properties in, give them to nonprofits that will operate them more as affordable. We don't have our arms around how many properties there are. I don't imagine 20. I imagine something much smaller than that, but we will do our best to make sure that what is affordable remains affordable.
Thank you. Any reactions or additional comments or questions? Hearing none, Corey, please.
All those in favor of approving a transfer of physical assets for Smith Hill Visions Limited Partnership, a property located in Providence, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 5 affirmative votes, and the motion is approved.
All right. On to Action 7, approval of transfer of physical assets for Barton Street Neighborhood Revitalization in Pawtucket. Anne.
Thank you, Chairman. So this is also an administrative action. We're seeking approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest in Barton Street Neighborhood Revitalization, which is a 27-unit family development located in Pawtucket. And the initial compliance period for this development ended in 2018. The general partner is an affiliate of Pawtucket Central Falls Development Corporation. And the current general limited partner is an affiliate of Enterprise Partners. So this limited partner intends to withdraw, transfer its partnership interest to PCFDC, who will assume all of the existing obligations. The current property manager is Barkin Property Management, and no change is anticipated in regard to management. So we're seeking approval of the transfer of the limited partnership interest to Pawtucket Central Falls Development Corporation. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions? None. Motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Seconded.
Questions if there are. Whistle.
All those in favor of approving transfer of physical assets for Barton Street Neighborhood Revitalization for properties located in Pawtucket, please say aye.
Aye.
Nay. The vote is unanimous. And
fantastic. We are at the end of our business agenda. Nothing further to be scheduled. Anything else before we conclude?
No, thank you.
All right. There's no further business, and I'd like to request a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, Mr. Steve.
Is there a second?
Second, Maria Berry.
Corey for the vote.
Mm-hmm. All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 5 votes to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, for those who are staying for...
Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 18th, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Intergovernmental Relations Committee. This meeting is also being conducted via live teleconference for public access. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the participant staff to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel of RA Housing. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view today's agenda and information being discussed this morning. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio can be restored. Chair of the committee, Stephen McAllister, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. And with that, I will turn it over to the committee chair to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Steve McAllister. I call the committee to order. Carol, will you conduct a roll call?
Certainly. Committee Chair McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Pryor.
Here.
Commissioner Orth.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Cabral.
Here.
Chair.
Thank you, and we're starting the meeting at 5. All right, so the committee item number one is the review and discussion of Rhode Island Housing 2024 State and Federal Legislative Priorities. The ball is yours.
Thank you, Chairman. Amy Raynon. So it's another busy year at the State House for housing-related issues. We're tracking about 265 bills right now. Again, seeing a lot of bills related to housing, land use, landlord-tenant issues, a number of things along that line, including a new package of housing bills that the Speaker has introduced, packages of 15 bills that were introduced in March. Just a reminder, in our approach to testimony is generally that we focus on high-priority bills that directly impact Rhode Island housing or our ability to achieve our mission and have a reasonable chance of moving forward. In addition to the testimony we provide, we do meet individually with sponsors of various bills if there are issues that may need to be tweaked in that language. And we also meet at least weekly with staff in the Governor's Office and the Department of Housing to coordinate on the legislation that's coming up in the different weeks and positions and testimony on those. And also continuing to participate on the Housing Affordability Commission and the Land Use Commission. So first, I'm going to dive in on the Governor's proposed budget. Just highlighted a few things that are housing related in that. $100 million Housing and Community Opportunity Fund, which Rhode Island Housing was pleased to support in testimony before the General Assembly. There were a number of changes made to the statewide lead registry that was passed last year. Originally, that registry was very much sort of a broad registry of all rental properties in the state. Governor's budget proposes to limit that registry to properties built before 1978 and really focus on landlords who have not provided the Department of Health with certificate of lead performance and pushes back the implementation date to September 2025. It also has a provision around the sale of surplus group homes, basically allowing the proceeds from the sale of those group homes to go back into supporting the maintenance of existing group homes rather than going into the state's IT fund. And then the last thing around housing was some changes to the integrated housing report, which the department develops in coordination with the HRC, primarily around adjusting timelines and data points. We've also been participating with the department on a number of hearings around our implementation of the SFR programs, SFR funded programs, as well as bonds and the dashboard, which we now have up online to track live our implementation of those programs. Any questions on budget? I would note that the caseload and revenue conference begins on April 26th and goes through May 10th, at which point you'll get a better sense of what the numbers are looking like for the coming year, and you would expect it to start picking up on the House and Senate Finance Committee to move forward. In terms of In December, when we met, we identified several priorities that we anticipated looking at in the coming year. Just wanted to touch base with you on where we stand on those priorities first. We talked about putting in a bill around the Section 8 properties to basically strengthen Rhode Island Housing's position in an anticipated rebid of those contracts from HUD. We did have a bill introduced, Senator LaMount in the Senate, Rep. Cruz in the House. It's been heard on the House side. Comes a little bit behind on pretty much everything, so we are anticipating the hearing to be coming up soon on the Senate side as well.
Chair, can I ask questions, or do you want to wait till the end? I know this is an important matter. You've explained this in other settings, and you have a good rationale. I would love to hear it again, if you don't mind it.
Absolutely.
So when you say strengthen Rhode Island Housing's position versus what other potential applicants or aspirants, and why does this matter to Rhode Island Housing?
Absolutely. The Section 8, the contracts to oversee all of the Section 8 developments in the state, which Rhode Island has done that work for the past 20 years, and about 32, I think, HFAs across the country play that role as the statewide PHAs. HUD has been postponing, extending our existing contracts for quite some time now as some legal issues have been worked through. They have made a couple of attempts to rebid those contracts, and in those proposed bids, they have done things like support regionalization of those services, opened up the ability for external PHAs from other states that are trying to expand their portfolios, basically, allow them to bid into other states. So, some states, Vermont in particular, we modeled this legislation off of, have taken the step of basically strengthening their state laws. The authority of public housing authorities is established at the state level. So every state defines the jurisdiction of their PHAs. So the Vermont law and this legislation that we have introduced basically refines the definition of Rhode Island Housing as a statewide PHA as the public housing authority in the state of Rhode Island with the jurisdiction to carry out this role. This role can, under federal law, can only be filled by PHAs. So it really just is another leg up. It complements the efforts that we're taking at the federal level with Senator Reid and the rest of the delegation to try to strengthen the language there to put some guardrails around the rebid that we anticipate HUD will do in the next year, probably, within the next year.
From my perspective, that's very compelling, your arguments, so I want to be clear about that. But just, we all have to play a role in the midst of our roles pertaining to protecting this institution, ensuring that it functions well. We also obviously care about outcomes for public housing residents, very much so. Stepping away from the institutional perspective, if you had to guess at a counterpoint, just guessing at what others might say, even if erroneous, what's the counterpoint? What would others say about why we should not have this particular strengthening of our position?
So in Rhode Island, I don't think there is a counterpoint. So there are some states where there are other public housing authorities that are vying for an expanded role within their state. And in a state like that, that PHA might object to the HFA or the statewide PHA taking on that role. We're not in that position in Rhode Island. In fact, PARI, the Public Housing Association, has written a letter of support. So we have the full support of the public housing authorities in the state. I suppose a counterpoint would be an external entity that would like to take over those contracts.
A national firm.
A national firm
or a PHA that operates at a national level.
And their institutional self-interest would be to say, well, we should have a shot. Separate from that, that's not of our interest.
Correct.
Separate from that is just some kind of an argument. I'm not arguing for it.
Yeah.
That services could be offered more efficiently if they're offered on a regional or national scale. Like, what are the public policy arguments?
I think that originally when this went out to bid, and Alabama, the Public Housing Authority in Alabama, was originally awarded contracts when they first started trying to do this, and that was overturned, and we retained those contracts. But as you can imagine, a entity paying extraordinarily low wages to people in a low cost of living part of the country might be able to bid for the contract at a lower cost. We feel very strongly that the quality of service would be very significantly diminished. Also, we feel very strongly that having that relationship with the Section 8 developments allows us to do the kind of thing that you just saw earlier in the board committee meeting, where we are preserving those developments. Cathedral Square, that was a contract that was not in our portfolio previously. So that's the relationship that we achieve by being the PBCA for those developments. So I think that there's a very strong case to be made that Rhode Island Housing is a statewide PHA, should continue to provide the excellent service around the oversight of these developments that it's been providing for the past 20 years. Keeps Rhode Island jobs, keeps the service local. It's a very compelling argument. Again, we're not in a state where there are various forces that might be competing for those contracts.
And the reality is we would have to continue to do a lot of that work because people will not get the service on the national level with a national vendor that they will get with us. So we would continue to get calls from representatives and local council people and interested parties to intervene and to try to assist people that live in this housing.
Right. Probably other states where the HFA, our counterpart, is not as well positioned to do this kind of work.
Yeah. Connecticut, for example. Yeah.
Could there be... This is a state law that's being introduced, but could there be a federal law that
HUD does have
it, like a quick HUD sure. override?
So yes. HUD does have the ability under their statutory framework where there is not a local PHA that has the capacity or they don't believe they can administer the program effectively. They do have the ability to override that. Yeah. But we are in very good standing with HUD in terms of our oversight of these programs.
And things are moving. We are going to Washington in May. HUD has been extremely accessible throughout this process and really great partners. And there is a listening session that's going to take place in May where we hope to learn more about what the solicitation will look like. And we're looking for a NOFO procurement.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The second priority that we had talked about before, and we had actually secured a consultant from the National Housing Trust and the National Consumer Law Center to work with us to identify barriers to maximizing the utilization of solar and renewable energy in affordable developments. So they have concluded that work. That consultant team did a wide-ranging stakeholder engagement, produced a report and a PowerPoint that sort of walks through their recommendations. I've bulleted out, really distilled down what was in their recommendations, not all of which require a statutory change. So their primary recommendations were to amend or eliminate the ban on master meters in developments of 10 units or more, while providing protections for consumers. This is something we have talked about in the past. Amend renewable energy incentive programs in the state to include adders, basically additional incentives to promote affordable housing participation. Currently, affordable housing is not a big part of those programs. Initiate a stakeholder process to develop consensus on implementing consolidated billing, which would streamline reconciling utility bills and community solar subscriptions. That was something that came up with a lot of stakeholders having a hard time managing those two different streams. And finally, coordinating with state agencies to provide in-depth technical assistance for affordable housing providers interested in deploying on-site renewable energy. And that is something also that we are going to be following up with OER Fuse City on to have some conversations about how we can better coordinate. In terms of legislation this session, a bill has been introduced on the master meter issue, and we did testify on that. I think that it's probably unlikely that bill is going to move forward this year. There are a variety of stakeholders involved that I think are interested in having some more conversation, but we will be working with the sponsors, seeing if those can be addressed in this session, but it's entirely possible that that will roll over into the following session. And we also are having some conversations with several of the members of the House and Senate who are active in the sort of solar renewable area to gauge their interest. But it's a little late in the session for something this year. We'll see if it's possible to amend any existing legislation, but probably this is going to be a good conversation for the summer and fall, and introduce something that's a little more fleshed out for the next session.
Is the report available to be made public?
Absolutely. I'm happy to, we can circulate it to the...
I'd love to read a copy of it.
Absolutely. Any other questions on that one? Okay. And then the last issue that we had identified was around giving Rhode Island Housing a first option to purchase surplus state property. We did have a number of conversations with BUDA and DOA on that. And eventually the decision was made, given the provision that the governor has included in his budget around the sale of surplus group homes. They'd like to see how that works through first before introducing other legislation around state surplus property. So we held off on that as a legislative priority.
Sounds like that was reasonable and collaborative to do. Could you just say a slight bit more, with the chair's permission, just a slight bit more on what you think the considerations are, just what we make for it, in the alternative to Rhode Island Housing having first position?
In terms of the reason why we didn't end up going forward?
So it's
primarily, I think, around the bidding process, and specific to group homes, because the governor's provision in the budget deals only with group homes and not with other surplus properties.
Okay.
However, group homes are a natural fit for potential residential redevelopment. And under the process that they are talking about, they would be bidding, they would be auctioning those group home properties, and the goal would be to get as high a price as they can for those properties so that they would have more to reinvest in the upkeep of other group homes. Our proposed legislation had been basically appraised value, and I think in the conversations, they just didn't want to get into those sort of different approaches to bidding those properties at this point. I think they'd like to see...
It could occur higher than appraised value in this market and other such concerns for revenue.
Correct.
Yes.
So we'll see how it goes with this session. I think it is an important issue that I hope we can revisit in the future, and we'll look forward to having some, ongoing conversations with BUDA and DOA after the session and see how this all works through.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Yes.
How many group homes properties are we talking about?
They are currently in the process of doing a strategic analysis around the group homes and their disposition. So they didn't have firm numbers right now. They're trying to figure out the condition of the various properties, which they want to keep and fix, which they want to surplus. So it's all wrapped up with the legislative proposal and that strategic analysis, which they have not completed yet.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so diving into sort of the rest of the package, I've included in what I handed out to you a table that we put together that gives more detail on the speaker's package. I'm not going to go into each of the bills, but just as summary for you, and happy to answer any questions that you may have. There were several of these bills that were sort of cleanup from last year, drafting errors, inconsistencies, stuff like that. There are One in particular, the inclusionary zoning bill, is sort of pulling back a little bit. They were very aggressive in the initial legislation passed last year in terms of the percentages and the density, and they're pulling back a little bit on that with amendments to that bill this year in response to some of the feedback that was received. The accessory dwelling unit bill was a important bill for the speaker in the last year's package, didn't end up being passed. I think it's his top priority in that package this year. And then there are various others that take different approaches, including requiring electronic submittal of information around zoning processes, some bills that would build up the capacity around building inspection, planning, create some tools for land use tools for folks. So pretty diverse package of bills, but again, another good effort on the part of the speaker to identify opportunities to remove barriers to housing development and try to statutorily remove them. So we did testify in support several times of large sections of those package rather than individual bills. If folks have questions on anything, please type it in at the end. The rest of the stuff, I have broken into issue areas. I'm not going to hit all of the legislation there. I'm just going to hit on the highlights, but again, feel free to jump in with any questions. There are several that deal specifically with Rhode Island Housing or Rhode Island Housing Programs. I've identified those at the top, primarily around down payment assistance, capitalizing funds for down payment assistance that we would administer, and also a bill that deals with the tax sale process and who's eligible to bid at tax sale. Transfer tax, there are a number of bills that seek to create more revenue through the transfer tax process, basically primarily adding more of that tax for higher value properties. And again, dedicating those resources towards affordable housing development. Incentivizing and affordable housing and removing barriers to housing development. There's a range of approaches being offered here. One I note at the top there is remediation of arsenic. This is an issue that's a big deal, in particularly in Aquidneck Island. We've run into this a lot. It just has a naturally occurring, very high level of naturally occurring arsenic in the soil. As it turns out, Rhode Island is a little bit of an outlier in the threshold that kicks off a remediation requirement. So this legislation would basically bring us in line with Connecticut and Massachusetts, which have a higher threshold. So that could significantly impact remediation costs for developments, particularly in those parts of the state. We did testify in support. There are also several bills here around giving nonprofits the first right to purchase multifamily properties, some zoning bills around requiring middle housing kinds of zoning in larger communities, some legislation to create a land bank to purchase affordable, purchase housing for conversion to affordable properties, a fund to create something along the lines of the public developer model that I'm sure everybody's been hearing a lot about, and legislation that would be promoted by the builders that would put properties up to 6 units be considered in the same zoning standard as 1 to 2 unit properties. It's a little weedy. on low-mod housing, there are a number of bills around how you tax low-moderate income housing, how you assess condo fees for low-moderate income housing, how you calculate the 10%, whether you're meeting your 10% affordable housing goals. Rhode Island Housing has testified on several of those. The ones that basically just undermine the 10% goal, we've generally opposed and continue to do that this year. There are several bills that have been introduced around accessibility, requiring developments to be fully accessible, requiring first floor of developments to be fully accessible, some things like that. We have provided some feedback to the sponsors on that legislation. And a whole host of bills around landlord-tenant issues, everything from capping rent increases to sort of tenants' rights and the things that you can ask about potential tenants. Most of our feedback on those bills has been one-on-one communications with bill sponsors to make sure that they don't conflict with federal requirements for the programs that we administer. Attempts to increase the MDE requirements in some legislation that's been introduced. On environment and energy, once again, seeing some legislation around sort of green building, all electric building, benchmarking of developments around their energy and water use. And then there's a little bit of a hodgepodge towards the end there about some additional legislation that we're tracking, but happy to answer any questions. There's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Well, I think that's good to point out, a lot of it is we're actually on offense. I mean, for how many years we've been here, and it was
absolutely
all defense. So I think that's, you know,
A good position
to be in here.
Yeah.
Not to focus on the negative stuff, but what should we focus on? What are some of the ones that we highlight that we don't think are taking us in the right direction? Anything that sticks out?
The things that are problematic?
Yeah.
So, you know, there
could be moving forward too. Not.
Right. I mean, I think that there are a number of bills that are trying to do a good thing. That are problematically framed. So as an example, on the accessibility side, the legislation that would require all affordable developments to be fully accessible, you know, that's an excellent goal, and we certainly share the goal of improving accessibility and are doing a lot in the development division right now with our guidelines and stuff to push something like that forward. But to require every affordable unit, newly created affordable unit in the state, to be fully accessible, there's a lot of barriers to that, and there's a lot of implications in terms of the amount of affordable housing we could create and density and things like that. So mostly it's that kind of thing, where there are folks that have, you know, good ideas, are trying to achieve a good that the way the legislation is framed can have negative consequences, and those are some of those one-on-one conversations that generally that we're having with folks. I'd say that's the biggest thing on the challenge front.
Any other questions or comments?
I'll compliment your question with, if I may, Chair. Amy, what do you think are the bills that would be the most important that are positive of the rest?
I think that certainly in the speaker's package, there are some excellent pieces of legislation. We've supported the ADU bill for many years. It feels like it's maybe the year that the ADU bill moves forward, so that's excellent. I think that our PBCA bill has a good chance. I mean, there's a strong case to be made for it, and not really detractors. It's more of a challenge of inertia at the General Assembly. On the budget front, certainly the housing bond is an important priority that, you know, assuming that the revenue caseload estimating conference goes well, hopefully we'll be able to move forward as an important resource for us. On the other stuff, I think there certainly will be some of the other bills that I talked about that move forward. It's really a question of how much attention. It's an election year. The General Assembly has already indicated that they're going to be getting out early. So it's not clear, and there have been in the Senate some turnover in the leadership and stuff up there. It's just not clear how much of an appetite they're going to have to do a lot of other elements.
Thank you. And we'll make a note to circulate the National Housing Trust report so that you all can get that report.
I also gave you the federal legislative priorities. There should be no surprises in this for you. This is the same primary priorities around the PDCA language that we already talked about, but this federal level and the appropriations. I will say, though, when we were in Washington in March for our legislative conference, it was at the same time that the Treasury and HUD announced the permanent extension of the risk share FFB initiative, which was very positive, very exciting. You heard just talking about some of the ways that we are using that. It's a great tool for us and an excellent accomplishment that was extended.
We certainly benefit from Senator Reid. He is an absolute powerhouse and supporter of affordable housing, and Senator Whitehouse joins hands with him all the time, so we're very, very lucky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the proposed LIHTC changes, I know there has been periodic efforts in both houses to enhance and expand LIHTC. Could you just give a feel for, at the federal level, what's the state of play, what really could move, which house is seemingly tip of the spear?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that one, the odds of that happening are looking slimmer and slimmer.
Yeah.
It passed. There was a lot of momentum, got it out of the house, and now it's really bogged down, and just the nature of the tax bill, you've got to act in a certain time frame, and that time frame is very rapidly winding down. So there were a couple of key provisions in the proposed tax bill, in particular, brought back the boost that we had, the 12.5% boost of the LIHTC program for several years that expired, and also would have allowed the bond threshold to drop down to 30% rather than the 50%. For a little while, it looked like that might go. I think that that's unlikely. At this point, possible, but not likely. And given the time frame of the what's happening at the congressional level, probably wouldn't be another really good tax vehicle for that until 2025. There will be a major tax bill in 2025. So there are certainly other vehicles that folks will look at, but the window's closing, and the next really good opportunity is probably going to be 2025.
And no problem if you'd have to check in with some of the associations and federal folks, but if there were a vehicle before 2025, do they have extenders bills that are coming up? Are there other routine measures that could be attached to?
So normally they have an extenders bill every year. You know, at the end of every year they used to do an extenders bill. But the last few years it's been bogged down
with
various political concerns that have not allowed those extender bills to move forward. So that was why there was sort of a lot of enthusiasm around trying to get this, the one that's underway right now. My understanding is that if it were to move on something other than the 2025 tax bill, it would probably be a different sort of must-pass bill that it rides on, you know, but not necessarily a tax extender bill due to the fact that there is that major tax package being contemplated for 2025.
I think the House passed the tax extender bill and it went to the Senate.
And it died, right?
It died there, the Republicans. Get enough together to get that. The Democrats were for it and couldn't get enough to get it. And I think we missed the window with the tax, you know, the 15th or tax day. That's when they were trying to get it.
Yeah.
I think we missed the window for those active standards that had expired. So I think Amy's right. I think it'll be a big tax because all the Trump tax cuts will be expiring. And they put the easy ones up first. They thought that the ones that they would be able to get bipartisan support, those were expired first. We haven't been able to do those yet, so we'll see. So we got a ways to go, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, that would have been a very powerful tool if it had been able to move forward.
Definitely. It really would. Just last one for my part on this. I think, first of all, this matters no matter the context in any given state and even prior to this, but now that we have on the way, the state LIHTC, we have a degree of moral authority and ability to say we're matching, we're doing our part. You know, the thing I want to put on the table, and we can talk separately about this, but right here in the public meeting, I'd love for in any of our capacities, I'll say in any of my capacities, to join meetings, to get on Zooms with Washington, go down if Carol and Amy, you think it's merited or warranted, not if you think it's a waste of time, but to really lean into this. So I think more value to the LIHTC program is just extremely important at this moment in time. The whole country is facing degrees of challenge. We may arguably have the worst challenge on the housing front. We just told Mr. Chair, Carol, Amy, lean into it. So just want to say, if you have the ability to scan just a slight bit in the middle of everything else going on, but on the federal front, for opportunities where there are other state housing officials getting on the line, or the discussion of the role of state LIHTCs in the system and how we're leveraging funds or whatever, I just wanted to volunteer.
Great. Thank you.
You know, others may want to volunteer too. I just think this is a good one for us right now. Please. Thank you.
Anything else on federal stuff? I believe that's all we had, state and federal. So I will take a motion, entertain a motion for adjournment. So we'll leave. Seconded by
the second.
I'm on the committee.
Okay. Seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Amy.
Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 18th, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Affordable Housing Trust Fund. This meeting is also being conducted via live teleconference for public access. The time is 10:45. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. If during a meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel of RI Housing. Members of the public can view the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions the trust will be taking this morning. If the teleconference portion is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Carol Ventura, Executive Director of RI Housing and Trustee of the Affordable Housing Trust, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioners in attendance, fellow trustees, staff, please do state your name prior to speaking for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference. With that, I'll turn it over to Carol Ventura, the presiding trustee, to call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Carol Ventura. I will call this meeting to order and Dr. Roll. Trustee LaChapelle.
Here.
Trustee Pryor.
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. Let's move on to action item number one, approval of the minutes of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund meeting held on, is it January 11th, 2024. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you. Any questions or discussion? Great.
All those in favor of approving the minutes of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund meeting held on January 11th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
With 3 affirmative votes, the motion is approved.
Thank you. Let's move on to action item number 2 on the agenda, which is firm approval of second mortgage financing for Harris House Apartments located in Ann.
Thank you. This is Ann Berman. This request is for firm approval of a second mortgage in an amount not to exceed $5 million for Harris House Apartments. Harris House is a 133-unit Section 8 development in Cranston. It was most recently refinanced in 2020 with extensive renovations completed in 2021. The developer has requested a second mortgage to withdraw equity resulting from rent increases. The proposed second mortgage will be a 30-year term with a 40-year amortization, but it will be due and payable if the first mortgage is refinanced at an earlier time. The combined loan-to-value of the first and second mortgages is 79%. The combined debt service coverage is 1.23, so we're confident that the underwriting supports the additional debt. The underwriting conforms with all of our standard requirements, except for vacancy, as we've touched on before in these Section 8 deals. We're underwriting at 4%. The historic vacancy is less than 1, and the appraiser used 3. Current interest rate that we're using for this loan is 8.25. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ann. May I have a motion to approve action item number 2, firm approval of second mortgage financing for Harris House Apartments in Cranston?
So moved.
And second?
Thank you. I have a motion to, no, discussion. Do we have discussion? Question?
I have a question. I like the loan a lot. I just want to ask, does this meet the mission of the Affordable Housing Trust as well? And how does it, maybe?
Kara, any thoughts?
Sure. So one of the things that we're doing with the Affordable Housing Trust is ensuring the future financial viability of the trust. This is definitely a diversification of our investment. So I think it has a dual purpose that it assists the trust in making sure that our funds are not all invested in treasuries or you know, Ginnie Mae securities, but it also supports a strong development that and a developer who we work well with. The value and the debt service coverage, I think, shows how strong this deal is, and so that's why we support it.
So it's not taking away resources that could be used for other purposes then?
Well, I think resources could be used, I think, for any purpose, but this is really part of the trust core funds for investment for the future.
Okay, so it's meeting larger goals of making sure that the trust is solvent and investing its funds wisely.
That's right.
Okay.
That and building for the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're very fortunate right now. We're in an environment where we haven't necessarily been tapping the trust for subsidy dollars to developments. I hope that continues, but this 8.25% loan will certainly add value to the trust.
Right, so the income will be plowed right into the trust and put out to other, okay, maybe riskier, perhaps, investments.
Better return.
For developments, okay.
Better return, yeah. Any other questions, comments?
All those in favor of approval of second mortgage financing for Harris House Apartments located in Cranston, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. With a unanimous vote, motion is approved. Thank you.
Okay, moving on to action item number 3, a similar facility, firm approval of second mortgage financing for Bradford Court Apartments in Burrville. Ann.
Thank you. As Carol said, this is a request for action for firm approval of a second mortgage, not to exceed $5 million for Bradford Court. Same developer, Cathedral Development Group. Bradford Court, 98 units. It's located in Burrville. It was most recently refinanced in 2016, at which time the developer did undertake a renovation of the property. This is also a request for equity withdrawal available as a result of rent increases. Same terms as the previous. In this case, the loan-to-value of the first and second is 74%. Debt service coverage is, again, over 1.2, so we're very comfortable with the underwriting. Same vacancy of 4%. It's got a historical vacancy of practically zero. We'll set the interest rate at closing, but currently we're using 8.25. So happy to answer any questions about this one as well.
Thank you, Ann. May I have the motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any questions? Discussion? I think it's great that we have such diversity in our portfolio, geographic across the state. No questions? Discussion? Okay. Corey?
All those in favor of some second mortgage financing for Bradford Court Apartments located in Burleville? Any opposed, say nay. Reaffirm.
We have the motion.
Second.
Corey?
All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
The unanimous vote.
Thank you. This is Carol. The question is now adjourned.